And I now welcome Mrs. Kay Catanz Zatari. I'm sorry, Kay, I can never get my mouth around your surname, but Hansard will have it spelt correctly. And I understand that information on parliamentary privilege and the protection of witnesses and evidence has been provided to you. So for the Hansard record, will you please state your full name and the capacity in which you appear before the committee today?
My name's Mrs. Kay Catanzariti, and I'm the mother of Ben Catanzariti that was killed in the ACT in 2012 on a construction site.
And you have two people with you at the table. I'm not sure whether they intend on making any contributions, but you might just identify them for us.
Ross Catanzariti, a cousin. He has been with me throughout the legal process. And Sonia Osfield from Victims Crime Support. She's a counsellor.
Thank you.
Of trauma.
Now, I'm sorry you had some difficulty getting through security this morning. We were scheduled to start at 9 o'clock, and we thought we had arrangements in place to allow people who are presenting to committees to be allowed access by 8:30 a.m. But that seems not to be happening. But I have asked the secretary of the committee to take that issue up with the Black Rod, and hopefully that will be resolved into the future. So we have received your submission, Kay, so thank you for that, and I acknowledge you have attended all the hearings we've done so far, and we'll probably attend all the future ones as well. So we now invite you to address your submission and tell us your story, and that'll be followed by some questions from the committee.
Thank you. I've written something out. I don't know if I will stick to it because I do go off track. I'm here today not by choice. I'm here because my son Ben
Do you want to take a break already?
Okay. It's okay. He was 21 years old. It's just overwhelming that it's finally come today. He was 21 years old, was killed when a 39-metre concrete boom, 3-tonne, collapsed and crushed his skull. In 2012. Unlike you, senators, that have chosen this career to represent the Australian people first and foremost, to listen, to protect all Australians and take responsibility in their health and well-being in our ever-changing world. We need to unite regardless of which party you belong to. We are all the same. We are human beings. We have the right to live our life without fear of going to work and not coming home. You have the power to make change, so no other person will be standing in front of another Senate inquiry in years to come. It is difficult to right past wrongs, but I would ask that as well as planning for the future, consideration be given respectfully in any way possible or appropriate to those who have already suffered and continue to suffer the loss of a loved one. I would recommend that if laws are changed, could they be included if still before the courts? I'm very passionate about that. I know I'm not here to speak about the journey we have been through in detail. You want to hear about how the system can be improved from my perspective, someone that has travelled on that journey. Please allow me to say this. While driving to Canberra to view Ben's body, my 16-year-old son, he'd only just turned 16 3 weeks before, said to me, "Mum, how can you believe in God now?" I couldn't give Jack an answer. When we arrived in Canberra, I called Peter Gobbo. He was and still is a Presbyterian minister who spent many years in Griffith and now lives in Canberra. Peter met us that evening. Peter knew Ben well. He travelled to Griffith and delivered Ben's service. Unfortunately, still to this day, my faith hasn't returned. It's in your hands, Senators. Now, preparing for today has been mentally, physically and emotionally draining, as I'm afraid I've left something out. But I'll keep going regardless, because that's what mums do. I've been asking for change and accountability since September 2012 from all states and territories. In this folder, 2012 and 13, they are emails that I have sent to every state and territory, workplace, minister, anyone that I thought that could do something. A lot of replies come back. Doesn't fall under my portfolio. I'm very sorry for your loss. They're all in there, plus I have got more. Now, my first meeting at Parliament House I received an email from Sean, now please excuse me in pronouncing his surname, Smedic, and I do now believe he is the National Director of the Master Builders, who will be speaking later. He was actually Tony Abbott's advisor in 2013. Sean sent me an email. I'm Tony Abbott's advisor in workplace relations and OHS matters, Sean said. I am happy to meet with you, myself, if that is okay, and also thinking you may wish to meet Senator Erica Betts, who is a Coalition Shadow Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations. I met Sean and Eric Abetz on Tuesday, the 19th of March, 2013, at 3:30 p.m. in Parliament House, and I have got emails and text messages attached. I recall sitting my Ben's ashes on Senate Erica Betts' desk, asking, what can you do to prevent another family experiencing this? Where he promised me, if Tony Abbott was elected Prime Minister, and Sean was in the room too, they would put lawmakers and law enforcers in the same room for the first time. They would speed up the sharing of information between police in different states and territories. They would work to get uniform laws between states and territories. I believe this has never happened. Now, hopefully, thanks to Senator Gavin Marshall, who promised me in 2017 a Senate inquiry will happen in 2018. After many phone calls, it has happened. Thank you. With respect to Senator Abetz, we need laws change before things are forgotten, what I was after speaking to you in March 2013. Make note that we are still waiting for the coroner to hand down her findings in Ben's case. I find it extremely frustrating not being able to directly speak to counsel assisting or Her Honour. It's against the law, for I believe the defence would classify it as you could be influencing the coroner. I believe the coroner has the power to expand the investigation with an extension of 12 months, allowing the AFP to investigate. This falls within the law. Yet, is there funding? Is there information that the coroner is unaware of at this stage from regulators? I also understand that the DPP have the power to reopen Ben's case. In July 2014, Swing Australia and Mr. O'Rourke were charged with the following offences: reckless conduct contrary to the Section 31 of Workplace Health and Safety Act 2011, and failure to comply with health and safety duty contrary to Section 32 of Workplace Health and Safety Act 2011. Prior to the trial starting, the director's son avoided his subpoena from the AFP. He skipped the country and was in America. Due to him not being handed the subpoena, the American police could not do anything. I still believe he is now living in Canada. This is a brief outline of Ben's incident. Ben worked for Bell Con & Concrete in the ACT for only a few weeks. He was on a three-month trial. Now, Bell Con & Concrete sent their concrete boom for a six-year service, which involved completely stripping down the boom to the extent of re-powder coating. It has an inner and outer ring of bolts of over 130. Due to the delay in receiving the bolts from America, Swing in Gosford installed the bolts. My question, why, if they knew, if it couldn't be used without the new bolts being tensioned correctly, was it the pressure to complete the service, to make room? Who knows? Why double handle? Why did the engineer sign off on the boom while he was on holidays? And I've got dates that it was all signed off and work was done on it. And I'll give you an example. I don't know if you've ever changed a tyre on a car. You have to do 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 3 o'clock. This machinery, the new bolts were put through access points. You cannot do 12, 6. They had to move it around. When the boom collapsed, the bolts that was collected, some had one mark, some had two marks, some had no marks, different coloured textures. There's so much more evidence that I could give you, but... And every piece of swing equipment worldwide was placed on hold the day Ben got killed, because this has never happened before. And I do recall a member of the AFP come up to me and he said, "You need to get yourself a good lawyer." And I said, "Why would I need a lawyer?" And he said to me, "Here's my card with his phone number." And I said, "Why do I need that?" He says, "You will be calling me." I said, "Why would I want to call you?" And he said, "Believe me, you'll be calling me every couple of weeks." And you know what? I was, because I needed to know what was happening. And I really respect him now. Craig Marriott, his name is. He was the AFP detective. Now, on the 19th of September 2012, I made my first speech at a workers' rally in the Civic Square, Canberra, where I met Chief Minister Katie Gallagher. And at the time, she came up to me and said her name was Chief Minister Katie Gallagher. And I said, "And who are you?" Because I live in New South Wales, not the ACT. And she said, "I'm the Chief Minister of ACT." And I said, "What does that mean?" She says, "It's equivalent to the Premier." I said, "Well, I really don't care who you are. What can you do to help me?" And it was very nice of her, because she gave me her mobile, which I did use at a later time. Mark McCabe was the Commissioner of WorkSafe at the time when Ben was killed. He was very helpful. He would return my calls. If I had questions, I sent them to him. And there was even questions that my husband and I put together that WorkSafe hadn't even considered. I had to email it to him. After this, the ACT government, I suppose, they put out the Getting Home Safely report, and it had 28 recommendations. Apparently, they have all been accepted. But once again, are they followed through completely? I don't know. They put on new inspectors. They got me to meet some of the new inspectors that they put on. But to me, how can you put an inspector on? What experience have they got? You know, you need someone that specialises in this field. You just can't pull anyone out to do an investigation. And I know there wasn't any deaths in the ACT after Ben's, which was on the 21st of July 2012, because apparently, I was told, many solicitors, companies, were waiting on the outcome of Ben's case, because I was told that they were quite confident, but you can never be 100% confident that there will be a successful prosecution. They were 99%, I was told. So everyone was on tenterhooks. The day the DPP dropped the criminal charges against Ben, within 3 months, there was another fatality. And I believe there's 9 charges laid against that company now, different individuals. So it just goes to show that that message hasn't been sent. Until there's a message that is sent through that the government is sick and tired of workers being killed, nothing's going to change. You need to send a strong message, and that was a very strong point that Mark McCabe made. Now, we first went to the coronial inquest. Now, the coronial inquest, I can recall being called into the chambers of Karen Fryer, because I'd never been in a courtroom before. I have never dealt with the legal system. And I do recall her saying, now this is the process, you have a coronial inquest, and then from the coronial inquest, if there's evidence given that they feel criminal charges should be laid, you then go to the industrial court. She felt, with the evidence that was presented to her, there was enough evidence to go straight to the industrial court. So she said to me, it's put on hold, and they went. We went to the industrial court. But then in amongst that, we got a phone call to say that Ben, which from the union, to offer their condolences, and there were certain things that had to be finalised, which is workers' compensation and superannuation through the courts. And they said they would come to Griffith to help us do the appropriate paperwork. And I said, no, you don't need to, because we had to meet the AFP the following week. Then the union rang back to say, look, we're really sorry, we can't act with you, because I needed a solicitor. And all they said, you need to go to a solicitor. Had no idea what, when, why. Had to find a solicitor, went to a solicitor in Griffith, because a third party had put in a claim. Ben got killed on a Saturday. A person that he was sleeping with, had a on and off relationship with, went to this a solicitor within the week of Ben being killed, put in a claim for his workers' compensation and superannuation. Someone that had never been brought home to Griffith to meet his family. Now, you may think that this isn't relevant, but if Ben wasn't killed, we wouldn't have had to go through this. And I do know there is other families in Victoria in a similar circumstances. So it is relevant. This person, once you put in a claim, you've only got 28 days for anyone else to put in a claim. Now, we're grieving the loss of our son, trying to organise a funeral, trying to do finalise things. But this person that is on, it's, doesn't have to do anything. Let's just say she ticked the boxes. Our solicitors in Griffith said, okay, you have to find a solicitor in Canberra because it's in a different jurisdiction. We had to find a solicitor in Canberra. We come to Bloomers in Canberra. They present you with all these pages, a contract that you have to sign. Now, if you have sudden trauma, you're advised not to sign legal documents and anything because you're not in that state of mind. And that, but they do state on the contract, take it back and get someone to read it with you and everything, go through it, understand. Anyway, we went through with those people, and they said that we were not permitted to put in a claim for superannuation or the workers' comp because Ben was over the age of 18, because he's a legal adult. So basically, once you turn 18, you forget your children. You've just brought them up for 18 years, and someone that they're friends with for 7 months on and off, in today's age, many young people are in and out of relationships. So we became a witness, my 16-year-old son and I. My husband couldn't handle it. We were a witness for the workers' compensation claim. And this is one thing that I found very distressing, going into a courtroom, not understanding the language that they use in a courtroom, like the solicitors, barristers, they call each other my friend. And I'm thinking, why are they calling each other my friend? I mean, are they friends? I didn't know, but I was offended by that. I said, why are they doing friends? But nothing was explained. The solicitor, the barrister that was acting for Allianz, he was supposed to prepare Jack and I to go into this courtroom, because I said to him, what side do you sit on? Where do you look? What do you do? He gave us 2 minutes out the front of the courtroom and he said, just answer yes or no. That's it. And then there was a question asked to me, did I know if my son was having sex with Kalia Boyd? And it's quite public because it's all in the papers. And I said, my son was 21. He was having sex with many people. He was living the life. Well, I was classified as then as a hostile witness. It was across the Canberra Times paper. That offended me. But in a court of law, what hostile means and what hostile means to the general public is completely different. All these things should have been explained to me before. We didn't have a voice at all, and we weren't permitted to hand in stat decks to say my son had bruises on him. Domestic violence works both ways, not only female, but in males too. We weren't permitted to do these, hand these things in. With the superannuation fund, this purse, it was awarded to us twice. Then my husband said to me, it would be so much easier if I didn't wake up. So as a mother and a wife, I collected my computer, I drove to Melbourne, I spoke to the caseworker. I said, you take everything. I don't want any more 28 days. Here are stat decks saying that this person basically wanted a stat deck and they refused to do it for them. What do you want for it? I had stat decks for that, but I wasn't permitted to hand that in for the workers' compensation claim. There was many other things also. It was finally awarded to us, Ben's superannuation, his death benefit, which was $200,000, and which is what our legal fees, roughly in round figures to date, is roughly $200,000 that we have laid out. If we didn't get that death benefit to his super, we would have had to mortgage our house. We could have lost our house. So what I'm suggesting and recommending with the superannuation fund, I believe you have a binding and a non-binding superannuation fund. There has to be a separate signature on there to say that you've actually viewed it. Because not just one signature, I've just joined a superannuation fund and send it off. It has to be viewed, it has to be acknowledged that you have seen it. There has to be a tick. There has to be also a signature on a beneficiary. When they send it off to the superannuation fund, if those two extra signatures aren't on there, send it back to that person and say, incompleted form. It's quite simple to me. It would save so much grief, extra grief when you do lose someone. And there was another thing that I thought of. Superannuation is our retirement. So why not have on your superannuation fund, have you a will? Because at the end of the day, we're all going to die, aren't we? That's one thing for certain. And pay taxes. Your superannuation fund is your estate. And then when you get your annual statement, Each year, it will have a reminder. Have your circumstances changed? It's quite simple. I don't know how you can do it, but to me, that's your jobs. The other thing was, after the workers' compensation, in April 2014, I then was... Sonia contacted me, because there's a two-year time frame. You can't have support unless criminal charges are laid. And Sonia has been perhaps one of the only counsellors out of the seven that I have seen that has truly helped me and helped, because you feel like you're going crazy. But that's all part of it. Your mind goes into a, what's the word? It blocks out. It goes into shutdown mode, a protective mode, you told me. So for 2 years, I was going to different counsellors, which were telling me different things, and you have to get someone that relates to you. But in the meantime, you're going to court mention, court mention, and court mention. I finally sacked Bloomers after all this, because I felt intimidated by them. Then I believed I needed to have find a solicitor to come to the industrial court, the every court mention. I didn't know where to go. I rang the Law Society, I rang the Bar Society, I think I put it in my submission, all the places I rang, and no one would recommend a solicitor for me. Because they may be, if it wasn't successful, they could be then liable. Now, someone that doesn't know the law system, I believe someone has to be there for you. I was given a list of three different solicitors from people in Griffith. I rang them, and we actually had a court mention that morning. So I had an appointment with Ben Orlick, and he came with me. Now, while I was in the waiting room with him and my friend, who is my support person, Rhonda Biedman, a solicitor, Bernard Cleary, he rang from London to say that he would be back in Australia. I was probably on the phone 2 minutes. My appointment was at 8 with Ben Orlick. Now, as I got off the phone, I walked in, he said to me, "Don't effing well keep me waiting. I'm not going to hold your hand. Sit down and listen to what I've got to say." Rhonda and I sat there looking at each other. He went through, he says, "I want you to get a folder. Everything that, I'm not going to repeat myself, everything that I send you, put it in a folder and leave it there." And at the end of the conversation, because we had court at 9 o'clock, I said, "Can I speak now?" And I said, "I just want to tell you who was on the phone." And I said, "It was Bernard Cleary saying hello and thank you for meeting with me." And he said he didn't want to know. Now, we went to court. Naturally, I sacked him after the first court mention, but he charged me a couple of $1,000. Then he overcharged me. It was a couple of $100, but that's a day and a half work for me. I had to go through and explain through multiple emails, step by step, where he overcharged me, because he didn't believe me. Now he's telling me, he's the professional, I'm not to ask questions, this is how it is. But he couldn't understand what I was saying, how he overcharged me. Then he finally admitted, oh, he did overcharge me of a couple of $100. He apologised. Now, I reported him and also Bloomers to the ACT Law Society, because I was sent the costing off to Bloomers, first of all, because they charged me $36,000. But if I paid it within a couple of weeks, I got $6,000 discount. Now, I sent the costings to a person that does, and he said he couldn't understand how they could charge that amount of money. I also sent that to ACT Law Society, but I had to pick my battles. I had to find Ben's coronial.
Okay, I do take your point that the event had all these consequences and they are all relevant to you because, as you say, they wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Ben's death in the first instance. But we do have some questions to ask and, you know, while I do appreciate that information, I'd actually like to come back to some questions now if you're ready.
Yeah, like I said...
If you had anything else to finish off on, that's all right.
No, it's just that I just feel that you have to find someone to help people have the right solicitor because you don't know you're traumatic.
Well, I was going to ask you, because in your submission, but you have clarified it, that, you know, you said people should be able to recommend an appropriate lawyer without the risk of being sued if unsuccessful in court, but... I think you have clarified that that was the fear of other people making a strong recommendation.
And all they're thinking of is a civil case.
Yeah, all right.
Where they make their money.
All right. Can I actually talk to you about the investigation itself? Because you make some points in your submission about the difficulty of which jurisdiction was going to conduct the investigation and whether they are able to talk to people. And can you tell us what you saw as the problem and the inadequacies as a result of cross-jurisdictional issues with the investigation into Ben's death?
Well, WorkSafe ACT and the AFP were not permitted to go into New South Wales. They then had to contact WorkSafe New South Wales and the New South Wales Police. They then had to find time to go to the premises. They had to do the investigation. ACT, AFP and WorkSafe were there, but they were not permitted, to my understanding, to ask questions. The witnesses refused to speak to the AFP. They would not. They were lawyered up, basically. There was delays in obtaining evidence, and what happens, they can only take the evidence that they take at the time. They cannot take any other evidence after the 2-year time limit. And they couldn't go backwards and forwards. And I have got copies here of the witnesses or their statements. They refuse to answer certain questions. Don't know. Why can't they answer them? That's the thing.
Whether or not WorkSafe... So do you think the 2-year time restriction had a detrimental impact on the investigation?
Certainly do.
Right.
Definitely.
Because I think you indicate here that you thought at the last moment there was another report put in, which then there wasn't actually time to challenge the veracity of that report.
Was it the 11th hour? It was on a Thursday afternoon. I think they got it about 4 o'clock because the DPP rang me to say, "Hey, you need to get to Canberra." And the coroner put a special mention on the Friday because we were to start the trial on the Monday. Now, they had people were flying in. They had witnesses. Everything was ready to go for Monday. And the defence put this conflicting report in. Yet, when the defence, when we had a court mention, I think it was April, they said they were ready to go. And there was a conflict because Chief Magistrate Lorraine Walker was going on annual leave. The defence said they were unable to come due to another issue that they were dealing with. So it was extended and we were to go to back to court, I think it was August. And this report that they put in at the 11th hour, which I picked up, not the DPP, I said, ask them what date it was given. And it was only given in a week before they handed it in. So that time limit is detrimental. I do not believe there should be a time limit on having evidence put forward, even to now, because there's evidence that I believe could be still used to this day, and I do believe it would be a successful prosecution. But then it comes back to double jeopardy. And I do believe, I hope you all consider, it's a recommendation that I'm asking, if you can change double jeopardy, because I do believe in other states they have changed the wording with double jeopardy, not in industrial fatalities, but why not bring it in?
Can you also talk about the jurisdictional issues in terms of the regulatory environment for the equipment that was in use at the time? Can you tell us where you believe that those different jurisdictional regulatory requirements impacted upon the incident?
Gosford, New South Wales, and New South Wales didn't have industrial manslaughter. ACT did have industrial manslaughter, and I know there was, the defence wanted the court, wanted the case to be heard in the New South Wales rather than the ACT, but they were successful in getting it in the ACT. But why not do it in both states? Because to me, they failed in New South Wales.
Yeah. Well, I was actually more asking about the regulations in terms of the crane and the stress and the bolts that you talked about, because the crane, even though it was being used in the ACT, was actually being serviced in New South Wales. And I think you made reference to that the job was signed off by someone that actually wasn't present, that was on holidays.
The engineer had signed off on the concrete boom when he was on holidays.
Right.
He left instructions for, I believe, a truck driver, concrete driver, and I believe the director's son to install the bolts through the access points. How can that be? He's responsible for seeing this work done. Isn't that an engineer's responsibility? And I'm not sure, do engineers have to be registered in Australia?
I don't know. But you talk about the lack of direct supervisory inspection and reporting systems meant that the work was performed incorrectly, not inspected or detected.
Yeah, wasn't inspected. Inspected, and if it was done correctly, there wouldn't have been leaf debris, there wouldn't have been water, there wouldn't have been paint scrapings in the holes when the boom collapsed.
So are you of the view that there would have been a different regulatory regime applied if the maintenance had been done in the ACT as opposed to New South Wales? Or if you don't know, that's fine.
I don't know. I really don't know that. I just believe that they did the wrong thing. They didn't follow procedure.
All right.
And whether or not that happens in ACT and New South Wales, I don't know.
Let Senator Gichui ask some questions, and then I want to come back and ask about support processes and how, well, what support you actually got after the event.
Yeah. I'm very sorry, Kay, about losing your son. I'm a mother myself, and I have a 21-year-old, so I get it at that level. And Thank you for taking the time to come and really explain what happened and also what happens after the incidents, because a lot of us lose sight of the other ripple effects that comes as a result of an industrial death. So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, as and when you are able, if you can write or tell us some recommendation, because you have a detailed, you know, experience, if you can put some recommendations in writing now or in what we have of how you would like to see victims supported.
Supported.
In future, and including the legal processes that we never see, the psychological impact that we never feel, and all those other things that happen, that happen because of the incidents. So that,
yeah. I think what a family would like, we need accountability. Mm-hmm. We need to be treated and shown respect and not brushed aside. We need to feel like our loved ones are worth something. And look, we're not white collar workers. Okay, so the support is needed through, and I did think about this, little things when you, someone can come and mow your lawn, like as a support afterwards, if it needs doing. Because you're in dismay, you don't know what to do, and you need people, I believe, like Sonia. I must admit, in the ACT, I was very fortunate, whether or not it was because I was vocal, because there's a lot of people out there that aren't vocal and they can't handle it, just like my husband. I believe if I wasn't as vocal, I wouldn't have had the support from ACT, Victims Crime Support. But once again, that's not permanent. Now, I don't know a time frame, and I believe I should be finished, technically.
So, Kaya, I think what we'd like to understand is, because you have it mentioned in your submission and in your presentation that you actually had some good support experiences too, but I think we'd like to know which one of those, you know, was sort of planned and structured, or was it just simply good luck?
Or the
will of the individual that was providing the support at the time, because one of the things we are interested in you know, what support ought to be offered, what transparency and information ought to be provided to the family as a matter of course, rather than, you know, if it happens, that's good, and if it doesn't happen, well, you know, it hasn't happened.
Transparency is a key factor in life. You need to be told everything that's going on. The unknown is what's scary. And with WorkSafe, now I put my trust and faith in these regulators. And then, but I have learnt so much over the last 6 years. Now I don't trust anyone. I don't believe anyone. People have failed me. People have promised. People need to follow through with what they have basically said. Yeah. Now, you need to be on a regular basis kept up to date with the inquiry, where it's going, what they're doing. You need someone to help you explain things. And, like, we have to keep a diary. We're told to keep a diary of who you talk to, how long, what it's relating to, why. You're not in any state of mind to do that, but this is the legal process that you're expected to do. And a lot of us, like, as I said, we'd never been in the legal system. You need someone specifically to guide you through the legal process, because the coronial inquest alone is a nightmare. And then you go into the coroner's court, the industrial court. You need someone beside you to help you understand. You need these regulators that you believe are doing the right thing, that are experienced. Whether or not you are given information about the investigators, I'm thinking of this now, to saying what their experiences is. And I believe an investigator that is doing it, they need to sign off to say that they are capable of doing this investigation. And people need to be able to speak up and say, look, this is too complex for me. We need to know as the family, because we are the best investigators.
All right. I just want to come back to the jurisdictional issue again, if that's all right. So ultimately, where was the potential penalty proceedings held? Was it in the ACT or New South Wales?
ACT.
Right. So and all the actions were brought in the ACT, but they were relying on evidence collected from New South Wales. Yeah. And you've indicated, I just want to clarify with you, because I'm not clear from your submission. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting that some of the evidence that was collected in New South Wales then wasn't admissible in the ACT?
Yes.
Right. Do you know why that was?
No, I don't.
Right.
There's certain things that I'm not permitted to know. WorkSafe ACT have told me. They will tell me after the coroner hands down her findings. They will go public with it. But I'm not permitted to know now.
So when does the two-year period you talk about for bringing a prosecution actually start?
Is it the time of death.
The time of death. But so 6 years later, we still actually haven't finalised the coronial inquiry?
No.
So are you saying that even without the coronial inquiry, there is no chance of more prosecutions resulting from that inquiry happening now because of the 2 years?
There is a chance, but I am on the understanding that the Director of Public Prosecution has refused to reopen the case, and due to
That's the ACT?
Yes, the ACT. Now, I also am on the understanding that the coroner has got the power to do an extension of 12 months to reinvestigate, where the AFP, who I feel are more experienced than WorkSafe ACT.
All right, Kay, well, thank you. I'll give you, if there's anything you think you still need to tell us, here's an opportunity, but you know you can always make a further submission to the inquiry.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah,
I believe they should introduce homicide. Not industrial manslaughter, but homicide.
Yes. Well, I suppose that's... it's not implicit in the... Well, I suppose it isn't.
I think it's under Section 50.
In terms of reference, that one of the things we are considering would be industrial manslaughter and how that's applied across different jurisdictions. So I take it that you would be in support of such a proposal.
Industrial manslaughter needs to be, but you need to get that wording right. You need to get it right. But like I said, Section 52 in New South Wales for homicide, I believe, could be used also.
Mm.
And one of the greatest things, I hope, that change will be made. And I thank you for this opportunity for speaking. Mm. And let's make it happen.
Yes, so we're hearing from a lot of families from victims. And so I probably will just say this so we don't have unreal expectations. A Senate inquiry will make recommendations. That's what we do. And I hope the vast majority of them, if not all of them, will be unanimous recommendations from the committee. But they are only recommendations from Senate report. The committee reports to the Senate, and the Senate effectively, even though it doesn't, this is the technical way, but effectively presents that report to the government for its consideration. It's only the government it's the Parliament that has the ability to actually change laws and do things, not simply the Senate committee. So while we can make our recommendations, and we will make some, that in itself doesn't actually change anything. So I didn't want anyone leaving the hearing thinking that just because the Senate committee makes recommendations that somehow automatically translates to a change in the law or a change in policy. But we hope, with the evidence that we've collected and the presentation of the report, that the recommendations we do make will be soundly based and backed up by evidence. And we would expect any recommendations to be very seriously considered by the government of the day.
And
so
like I
just
said,
wanted to put that on the record.
We're all human beings, regardless of what party you're from. I don't think any of us want someone dying at work.
No.
So we're all here for the same reason. Just quickly, a register of people that have been killed, I believe if you go to the undertaker, because an undertaker has to submit to Centrelink and to birth, death and so forth on a death, why can't they submit just at another submission to Workplace Minister or the Commissioner for each state and territory that there has been an industrial fatality, so it goes on record. So you have actually got a record. It's only one extra submission that they can do.
I would have thought every jurisdiction actually has a mandatory reporting system to the appropriate regulator for an industrial death, but I have heard that concern raised, and it will be something we're checking, and certainly if that's not the case, I'm sure that will be one of our recommendations, but I'm pretty sure these are mandatory reporting obligations already for an industrial death, but if it's not, we'll have something to say about that.
Yeah, no, thank you, and appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you, Kay, and thank you to your support people.
Thank you.